Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Rookie and the Vet podcast.
What's going on, guys? We're back with another episode.
This is our wrap-up episode of season one. So we're going to spend the second half of this podcast kind of wrapping up season one, kind of reflect back on the people that we interviewed in this season, some of the highlights of our conversations with them, and just kind of forecast what we have to look forward to moving into 2020 or 20 squared or what else, what are the things that we say?
Double 20 was just
double 20. That's right. Double 20. So all of those different ways to refer to next year, which I think since it's 2020, we should say the year of vision, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So the year of vision. And so we're looking forward to that. But before we do that, I know that you had spent some time kind of curating basically some questions from listeners based on previous podcasts that we've done and just different things around the community as far as social media and just people you talk to out and about. So let's jump into these questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a great outreach from people on Instagram and email. So if you have any questions for us, you know, feel free to reach out. We'll start off with the first question from Maria. Maria from Washington State asks, I'm a small business owner who is getting ready to quit my full-time job to pursue my business in hairstyling. I feel hesitant to leave the stability of my 9-to-5 job, but I truly love what I do as a hairstylist. Do you have any advice on how to ease the anxiety of transitioning to small business ownership?
That's a tough one there.
That's a good question.
I think there's two schools of thought with that. There's a play it safe school of thought, and there's a cold turkey, just get your ass out there and do it, hustle kind of school of thought. So let's kind of address maybe both sides of the coin and the pros and cons of both of those.
Yeah.
I think from the standpoint of play it safe, I know that I've talked about my story before and talked about how when I first started Y Entertainment, I was working a full-time job as a kind of unpaid, untitled manager of a retail store where I was working there anywhere from 40 to 60 hours a week, plus working with this business and launching this business. And for me, what I found what was best to do was to continue that grind and keep building this business until it got to the point where realistically that particular obligation and that particular job was in the way of me being able to make more money with my own company.
Yeah, David, that's a great point. I wish I could say that I followed that school of thought. I kind of was more of the cold turkey method, not out of, well, realistically, I mean, I could have kept my job or went to find another job, but I used Vesta and my experience there with the contract ending. I knew that it was going to be difficult to continue to grow in that company. So I kind of just, the contract ended and we just left. And then I saw that as the opportunity for me to kind of start my own business. But realistically, looking back on it, having the income from another job would have been tremendous. And honestly, I'm still toying with the idea of, you know, maybe like a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, because what I'm noticing right now is, you know, especially on the weekends are primarily when you work. So I have a lot of free time during the week that I've been filling with video editing and stuff like that. But even more supplemental income would be nice, because you can pump that straight back into your business, which I think is really valuable.
Yeah, and we're both big fans of Gary Vee, and we talk about Gary Vee a lot on the show. And you know, that's one of the things that he talks about is, you know, why give up income that you know is going to be coming in, that if you have the ability to utilize that income to finance your company and finance your business. So maybe without knowing more about what situation she's in right now, it does make it a little bit challenging to offer an answer to how do you ease the anxiety. But it also depends on the kind of go-getter of a person you are also.
Right.
I mean, if you're a go-getter and you've put your mind to this and you've just said, listen, I'm going to do this hook or crook, I don't care what happens, then I think instead of feeling anxious, you should feel excited. You should use that concern. I don't like to use the word fear of failure, but you should use that concern of possible failure, because you don't even want to put yourself in the mindset and the possibility of it happening. We all know that it's a reality. Anything could fail. A business that's lasted for 5 years could fail. A business that's lasted for 50 years could fail. On year 51, you just never know.
And another good point to maybe ease the transition from the 9-to-5 to your own company is if you have some sort of safety net of finances. I know that would always help. I know some people recommend, you know, years worth of expenses for something as, you know, unpredictable as your own company. So having some safety net of income, I think, is really helpful for that. But like you said, David, I mean, look at Enron and other companies that, you know, that they were like, oh, we're indestructible, right? Like, oh, nothing's we can't be, you know, broken. And look what happens, you know, they collapse. So anything can happen to anyone at any time.
You know, and another idea too, and is maybe looking at the possibility, depending on where she's at now. And there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that we don't necessarily know the answers to. But here's a suggestion as well, is maybe go to your current employer and say, hey, listen, this is what I'm wanting to do with my life. Are there any opportunities here for maybe part-time work? So you don't necessarily just totally quit your job, but you look at the possibility of saying, hey, could I shift to a more part-time role? You know, be honest with your employer. Understand what could come out of that. Your employer might be like, well, see you later then. If you're done, you're done.
Yeah.
So you have to be prepared for that possibility. But if you have a good relationship with your employer, if you have a good business relationship with where you're at right now, there's nothing wrong with being open and communicating that here's where I see my life going to. I'm not necessarily ready to jump into the deep end of that yet. But if you're maybe willing to work with me on this side of things and maybe let me transition into a more part-time type basis, then maybe I can at least, you know, go into the shallow end of what I want to do and then eventually work my way into saying, hey, now I'm ready to 100% get into this thing.
Yeah, great points. Moving on to the next question here from Joshua. Joshua asks, I'm in the service-based industry and I'm often dealing with clients who are upset and angry for me for the service they received. While most of the time it is out of my control, how can I handle these types of customers and turn their experience from a negative one into a positive one?
Joshua, oh my gosh. Sounds like, well, I don't know if Joshua is the boss of this situation or do we know if he's the, is the owner of the business?
He didn't specify anything.
I mean,
he's in a service-based industry, so that, I mean, that could be realistically.
Let's just hypothetically say he's the boss. The easy answer is get rid of all those people because obviously they suck. No, that's just kind of tongue-in-cheek. But seriously, I mean, the challenge with a service-based business is a lot of times when you're providing a service-based business, that means that you have other people that are helping you provide that service a lot of times. Like, for example, with my company, I have, you know, 7-8 other people that represent my company name that I have to put my trust and faith in that they're going to do that at the same level that I'm going to do it at. And when they make mistakes, when they don't necessarily live up to the potential that the client feels that they should have received. And that can happen to me too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm definitely not, you know, I'm definitely not impenetrable to, you know, negative things happening or experiences not necessarily happening the way the client would like it to, because in all reality, that is something that doesn't necessarily always guarantee you just because of experience, just because of knowledge, just because of anything. There's no guarantee that the experience that your client is looking for is going to be provided with all of those things. And so sometimes, you know, as Joshua stated, you know, sometimes it's a scenario where it's out of your control. And I think the only thing you can do is maybe learn from it and don't necessarily take it as a negative completely. But maybe if you have the opportunity to really dig a little deeper, dive a little deeper with that client and find out, hey, ask questions like, hey, what could we have done differently? Could we have asked better questions beforehand? If you were a client down the road for us, what questions do you wish that we would have asked you to prevent this from happening? What areas do you think could have been addressed beforehand? Because I know a lot of times that happens with us. And I know, Nick, you probably deal with that sometimes on your end, right? Like you'll have a client that'll say, oh, well, I wish in our world, I wish that we would have had this plate or that plate, or, you know, I wish we would have done, anything like that. And your initial reaction is always to say, well, heck, I wish you would have told me that before the event and we could have made that happen. But sometimes we have to remember that the client that we deal with, especially in the event world, they're dealing with me, but they're also dealing with me. They're dealing with you. They're dealing with the photographer. They're dealing with the cake baker. They're dealing with the dress hemmer. They're dealing with the venue. They're dealing with all of these different people. And they're typically doing an event that they've never done before in their lives. So they don't always know the right questions to ask ahead of time. So I think it's really important, though, to have that good follow-up and do it in a open-minded, open-hearted fashion to where you're not defensive at all. You're open to any kind of, you know, constructive criticism, and you're open to even them blatantly saying, look, this totally sucked and I'm pissed.
Right. Absolutely.
And then just finding a way to say, you know, respectfully, I understand that, but I want to make sure that this doesn't happen to another client again. Because if it's continue, because I feel like I heard you say continually happening.
Yeah.
In the comment there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So there is a breakdown somewhere where the client apparently has one level of expectation and what's being provided based on that expectation is not living up to par. So maybe it's a possibility of, you know, the old saying, we always want to under-promise and over-deliver. Those things might be reversed a little bit. You might be over-promising and under-delivering because you just don't necessarily have the capabilities to deliver. And it's like, you can't offer and promise something just to get the booking. Like if somebody told me they wanted me to have a bride and groom have their grand entrance riding in on elephants and us having like people playing trumpets and,
right,
you know, instruments on them, I'm not going to just say, oh yeah, sure, you know, just to, you know, book the business.
Right.
Like I would have to really explore, can we really make this happen,
yes,
before I say yes to that?
Yes.
You know, so.
Absolutely. A lot of great points, David. I think another thing that immediately that Joshua could do is just acknowledge the frustration of the customer in the moment. Acknowledgement's huge. Most people just want to be heard. I noticed that. I mean, I've been in the service business even outside of my company and videography. I've been in the service business since I was a teenager. Acknowledgement's huge. When people feel acknowledged, they let their guard down, and then you can begin to have the exchange of like, all right, well, how can we make this better? Or how can we, you know, improve the situation? But, and then prevention in the future. Like, you know, Joshua, you did say this is happening more than one. This has happened numerous times, you know, because you're saying all these types of customers. So that's a problem, you know, and you have to figure out, you know, in the chain of what's happening, you know, how can we fix that? And then prevention going forward, but, you know, acknowledgement also. So
again, a lot of times the client ahead of time, they don't know the right questions to ask. And then after the fact, it's like any of us, you know, the old saying, the old Monday morning, what do they call it? The Monday morning quarterback, or
yeah,
the Monday morning armchair quarterback. Like we can sit there and debate everything that should have happened after the fact. But, you know, using that analogy, none of us have ever, at least most of us have never even set foot on an NFL field. So
right,
to be able to make that kind of claim,
exactly,
is not always that easy. So I think understanding that your client is not in your shoes, they don't understand every aspect of how you do what you do. And so sometimes it's not necessarily that they didn't ask questions beforehand or they didn't establish expectations beforehand. Sometimes it's just that they didn't know that they had to. They
right,
didn't kind of realize that the importance of things that maybe we might take for granted. And so it's just being more aware ahead of time. It's learning your lessons as they happen, and it's putting a plan in place and creating almost like that manual of how your business is going to conduct themselves moving forward after these things happen. You can relate a lot of this to childhood.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's great when children make mistakes, because if they don't, how else do they learn? How else do they know that something is not right to do?
Yeah.
If they don't ever do anything wrong.
Absolutely.
Or if they're made to believe they've never done anything wrong, which is even worse.
Right.
You know what I mean? So mistakes are okay, and I think they're great. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, though. We're going to come right back with more of your questions and answers. We're just getting started on this. You're listening to the Rookie and the Vet podcast. Thank you for joining us.
What's going on? We are back with the Rookie and the Vet podcast. We got some more questions from our listeners. Imani from Houston asks, "Hi, David and Nick. Just wanted to say thank you for the weekly episodes. This podcast has helped me so much in so many ways. Thank you."
Very nice.
"My question is primarily for David. I've been a DJ in the Houston area for about 5 years now, and I've noticed I'm having some difficulty penetrating the space. I am one of the only female DJs in Houston, and I feel like sometimes there's a glass ceiling with female DJs in this industry. Do you know of any way I can break through this? Is it all in my head?"
Well, first and foremost, thank you for listening to us on a weekly basis. That's very kind of you to do that. We have worked really hard to make this podcast something that people will want to continue to do. So we definitely don't want it to be something that you listen to one time and just be like, yeah, next, let's move on to something else. So that's right. that's a testament, Nick, to you just as much as it is to me that at least one person out there thinks we're worthy of being listened to on a weekly basis, right? But to get to the question, no, there's no glass ceiling. Let me tell you, I have met some phenomenal, tremendous female DJs in this industry and all different facets of it, whether it's the nightclub scene, whether it's the wedding scene, where it's the social and private event scene. There is going to be that perception out there. And I think that it is definitely a male-dominated industry, but I think that you kind of have to go into it with the mindset of the fact that, listen, I'm a DJ first and foremost. Whether I'm a male or female shouldn't really matter. If you're capable of the job, you're capable of the skills, then those kind of things shouldn't matter. I think it's important for you to continue to keep putting yourself out there, continue to keep finding opportunities to showcase your talent, because sometimes that's what it takes. I mean, in this industry, I always say, you know, at every event I've ever done, I always tell people there's either somebody there that was a DJ, is a DJ, or knows somebody who's a DJ. Right. Every event, there's always somebody that falls into that category. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And some of that's probably true, and some of that's probably boastful, and it doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, the point behind that is that while I really believe and I really feel that the perception of a DJ is evolving to a positive fashion. I've talked about this a couple times with several people over the last couple of months about how the, you know, back in like the late 80s, early 90s, like when you saw a TV commercial or when you saw a TV show or a movie where there was a DJ in it, they were always kind of like, I use the example of like the court jester, like, you know, just some cornball, hat to the side, pants sagging down, you know, just goofy, silly person. And I mean, if that's your fashion, don't get me wrong. I'm not insulting the fashion. But the point I'm making is that that person was kind of made up to look like kind of a goof, not to be taken seriously and not to be taken with any kind of level of credibility or professionalism. And I think over the course of the last 5 to 10 years, that's really changed. And a lot of that we can attribute to technology. A lot of that we can attribute to the evolution of music and things like iPhones and iPods and Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube and all of these different things that have come into our generation and have come into our industry that have changed the scope of people's appearance of what a DJ is. And now we're also moving into a point where the generation of parents whose kids are getting married and the generation of people who are throwing these corporate functions and all of that, they're the generation who has always lived with at least a computer, and most of them probably a cell phone or iPod or something, a variation of that, in their pocket. And so they're used to that electronical delivery of music versus a live band. So I think that, you know, you're in a really good opportunity. You're in a really good space. I think that the best thing that I could recommend to you to do, like I mentioned earlier, is find ways to showcase your talent. If you have to donate your talent, then do so. I'm a big proponent of donating and not discounting. I really believe when you discount your talent, so for example, if somebody can't pay your full rate, whatever your full rate is, I don't really necessarily promote discounting your rate, because unfortunately a lot of times when you do that, people discount the value of the service that you're providing. But instead of discounting it, donate it. And usually in donating your talent or donating your services, there comes some sort of return on that. So maybe it's an opportunity for advertising. Maybe it's an opportunity for having your logo on any kind of marketing and advertising, having your name include music provided by DJ Amani or you know, whatever the name is there, right. Making sure that value, say your rate is $1,500, making sure that you at least have been given $1,500 in value of people being able to know who you are and your presence and involvement, and not just saying, oh, well, all you have is $600. Well, I'll just do it for $600, because I can assure you that from that point forward, them and everybody they talk to are going to expect you to do it for $600.
That's so true. You know, it really is. And I've noticed that, you know, in my own business too. Like, you can't go under what you want to, because I noticed I actually did that a few times, speaking from experience, and it's like your worth, actually how you perceive the service, does change. And I mean, it changes how you perform too. And I know it shouldn't, but when you don't feel like you've been justly compensated, I feel like your performance sometimes, you start to thoughts of doubt kind of start to creep in, and it gets ugly. But Amani, I would say, you know, you have it sounds like she has a unique niche. So I would say exploit your niche. I mean, it's female DJs are rare, but that doesn't mean, you know, that you're excluded from that. It means that maybe you have the opportunity to monopolize or to create some cool niche for yourself.
I know that in the wedding space, there are a couple of companies, and there's one specifically in Orlando that is 100% female DJs, and they do a phenomenal job, and they've been able to really create an identity for themselves. And it's not like this all bro women blah 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 thing, but it's more of a you know, hey, we're capable of doing this job, we're a bunch of women that love doing this job, and we want to provide a unique service and a unique experience that people are obviously looking for, because those ladies stay very busy, and they're very prominent in their market, and so it's possible to be done. And it may be a scenario where you need to kind of just look at, where am I most comfortable at? If you're into doing more social corporate type stuff, you know, maybe look at doing some stuff for startup companies. Maybe look at doing, you know, what is this new kind of phrase now, Nick? Like party for a cause or
oh yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
They even in Jacksonville, they have like these DJ, like they DJ like runs and like 10Ks and 5Ks, sure. And there's all kinds of things that you can DJ now, and it's crazy how it's becoming so.
And the key of it is remembering that you're making an investment in your brand, and you're making an investment in your identity, and that's why all of those things I mentioned have to be in place. If you're not going to be able to receive monetary value for what you're doing, you've got to find a way to receive some other value. Look at it as making a deposit into an investment account that you'll be able to, receive dividends from later on down the road.
Absolutely. All right. Moving on to our final question from Marcus. Marcus asks, I'm a small business owner who makes micro-budget music videos for aspiring artists. When business is great, it's really great, and I feel like I'm on top of the world. When it's bad, I begin to question my purpose, my business, and contemplate alternatives. I love what I do, but how do I bridge between the highs and lows as a business owner?
Well, I have a saying that I really try to live by. I never want the highs to be too high, and I never want the lows to be too low. And so I think it's important to understand and forecast, once you've had your business for a little while, you're going to be able to see trends. You're going to be able to see patterns. The initial feeling of that makes sense to me, because if you're in your first year, your first 2 years, you don't really have any data to look back on, right? But after you've been doing this for 3 or 4 years, if all through these 3 or 4 years, this exact same pattern has continued to keep happening, then it creates an opportunity for you to be able to be prepared to plan ahead for it. And when I say plan ahead, that can mean financially plan ahead. That can mean, okay, mentally, I need to remind myself, I know this is coming. I know this is going to happen. It's happened in the past. I don't need to get scared about it. I just need to be prepared for it, and I need to be ready for it. And I also need to be looking at, okay, next year, that means that, let's say that time frame for you is going to be from August to like October. Then maybe think to yourself, is there anything during August to October that I could utilize the same skills and talents that I have for these music videos, but in a different area, where maybe I can supplement my time, and I can supplement my income, and I can supplement my, you know, whatever it is that I'm looking for, to not let those lows get too low? Is there a possibility to do that? And then try that the following year. Prepare for it ahead of time. Start shooting for it. Start advertising for it. Start marketing for it. And see if you can pick up a few clients. Even if you pick up two or three the first go around and you don't totally book your calendar out, but you find that, hey, there are people that actually like this idea, then build on that. You never know.
Right. And like you said, it's some is better than none, for sure. So one piece of advice that I would recommend or give to Marcus is, you know, make sure you look back on your past success too, because I mean, if you're making music videos, you've obviously had business before. So look back on that. And it's important to recognize that, you know, there are going to be highs and lows, but as David said, don't let your highs get too high. You know, I've been guilty of that as well. Like when something goes well, it's euphoric and you're ecstatic. But you know, when it gets low, you know, I think Gary Vee said it. I think it was Gary Vee.
You might be right.
And he's like, I don't get excited about the highs because like makes the lows less low or something like that. It was something along those lines. Keeping a level head is definitely important. And like David said, you know, there's other, you know, other markets, kind of similar to the advice for Imani, you know, like there's other markets to explore, you know, always see, you know, what you can be doing. You know, I've found, you know, in the very beginning of my company, you know, there's a lot of different markets that I never thought I would be getting into with videography. I filmed a recital, a concert recital for a music teacher yesterday. Never would have thought I'd be doing that. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think just to kind of drive home the thought process again, that to understanding that business is about highs and lows. I mean, heck, we all have what we call a profit and a loss statement.
Right.
And a profit and a loss is not always just attributed to money. Sometimes it's time. Sometimes it's hell. Sometimes it's your brain power.
Right,
you know, like sometimes you feel like you can't go any longer. You might go through this run of working hard and just killing it for 3 or 4 months and find that, man, I just need to take a couple days off. Now, one way of looking at it will tell you, yeah, you probably should do that. But that person that's that, you know, we'll call them the Instagram hashtag hustle person will probably tell you, keep going, keep going, keep going. So, right. You know, like you just have to understand like what works best for you. And again, anticipate the fact that there are going to be highs, there are going to be lows. It's a part of life. It's a part of business. It's a part of doing what you're doing. And if you can channel those and you can use those to your advantage, take every single part of it. And it is important to celebrate the victories and the wins that you have in your life and in your business, whether they're large or small. To your point, you know, Nick, I'm sometimes guilty of not necessarily celebrating the high stuff. And I'm worried about doing that because I feel like if I do that, right. I'm going to take my foot off the gas. But it's important to not just be like
a robot.
Yeah, you can't be robotic about it. Exactly. Yeah. You've got to have some emotion involved, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, I think that wraps up our question and answer portion of this. We are going to wrap up this episode today, and we're going to have our episode next week. We're actually going to use that episode next week to have a recap of season one. So please check back with us. We'll look forward to talking to you guys next week as we recap season one of the Rookie and the Vet podcast.
Take care, y'all.